Hello, listeners. Nina here to talk to you about Sincere Notes. Oftentimes, we really want to be in touch with friends for important dates. We are not trying to forget. We are not trying to be thoughtless, but we didn't schedule it. Sincere Notes is an app that allows you to schedule future messages so that you can stay in touch as often as you want and really be there for those important moments. And I'm not just talking about birthdays, although obviously birthdays are a great place to start and a subject I hear a lot about, but also something like grief anniversaries, a big surgery coming up, the anniversary of somebody's sobriety. Sincere Notes was developed for that, and it's a really easy, seamless app. It's not complicated at all to set up. You will find it a breeze to use. You can find Sincere Notes available to download for free on Google Play or the App Store. Check it out. And now on to the show. Welcome to Dear Nina, Conversations About Friendship. You are here for a bonus episode. I really enjoy sharing the occasional episode on my own feed where I was a guest because it's a completely different vibe. I am the one answering the questions instead of asking the questions, although sometimes I end up asking a question back. I just can't help myself. I was on Jasmine Proctor's podcast, The Visibility Standard. A lot of what we focus on in this episode is what I would label modern friendship. And my friendship with Jasmine is a great example of a modern friendship. We met online. I think we met on TikTok. And although I'm quite a bit older than Jasmine, I have a pile of kids in this house, old kids, teenagers. She doesn't have kids. We have lots in common, love a lot of the same shows. We text in between. We had a great walk and talk on the phone the other day, but that all took time. You don't just meet someone online and then become friends immediately. And I have lots of online friends that never go to the next level. It just stays where it is. And that's fine too. That has value too. But Jasmine's been a wonderful friend that I've gotten to know a little bit more all the time. We have more to go, I am sure. She very graciously is allowing me to share this episode from last year. We talked a lot about something I dabble in here and there when I am talking about it as the host, but I get into it a little more when I'm a guest. And that is a lot of the bad feelings that come up when people have a very online business. You can be a real estate agent selling houses and you have a big Instagram presence. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways that your business can show up online. The expectations that people might have of their friends who are not in that business, you might not realize your friends are carrying some of these expectations. I actually try to be a voice of reason who was trying to get people who have an online presence to let go of those expectations. Appreciating something and expecting something are a universe apart. It really makes a big difference in how you treat your friends and face them and think about them. I'm here to defend the position of being reasonable. And Jasmine agrees with me. And I was very happy to hear that. We talk about other modern friendship issues too, such as relying on memes, maybe a little too much to communicate. If you're never seeing your real life friend in person ever and you are always relying on memes, that might be something to look at. I'm not here to do any actual measurements or give you any answer to what is the quote unquote right number because I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. It's just something to think about if you are never seeing your friends in person. And we also talk a little bit about forgiveness. I will have the full episode here and you can also in the show notes find other ways to see Jasmine's work. Again, her podcast is The Visibility Standard, and she's at Jasmine Proctor on TikTok and Instagram. You can see that spelling in the show notes. And now I give you Jasmine as the host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Our Parts. If you are new here, I am Jasmine, the host, and I am so excited for my guest today. She is podcast host of Dear Nina, Conversation About Friendship. Nina Badson, I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. And you pronounced my last name perfectly. That doesn't always go that way. So thank you.
I really try to crush pronunciations because it's so important.
It is. I know. I have the same pressure as a podcast host.
So tell us about how did you get into the topic about friendship? You've been podcasting. You've been a writer for years on the topic. How did this become your passion?
As a writer, a freelance writer, you lean into things that you're really interested in. I've always been interested in friendship a long time ago. I would say easily 18, 19 years ago. I actually wrote a novel that never got published and never should. I'm very grateful it didn't, but it got close. I almost got an agent with it. I spent years on this book, and it was about a friendship breakup. It was about a woman who was dumped by her best friend, and then she ends up connecting with two other women who were later in different parts of that best friend's life, dumped by the same friend. And so the three of them bond over the fact that they've all been dropped by this woman. I was in my 20s when I wrote that. Then I put that aside for a while. That was fiction. In nonfiction, I'd written some things about friendship, but as I had more kids, I have four kids, I ended up writing about parenting a lot because that's what I was in the thick of. So I had articles in, you know, magazines and different places, and I would write about parenting. And then when my oldest was 10, it became very clear that I did not want to write about parenting anymore for two reasons. First of all, I was living it. I was in the thick of it. And I didn't want to also have my work be about it. And also the kids were becoming more aware. And this was nonfiction. It was a lot of like surface type of articles and stuff. So I wasn't necessarily writing about them. But yet you are referring to them in some way, shape, or form. My oldest, I could just tell he a couple times had come up in front of other people, like things I'd written about. Like I'd written about his piano recital one time. And he was like, "You wrote about that?" And I was like, "Okay." I could just see the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. And I did not want to keep going with that. Around that same time, a couple of women who were starting a website for women wanted to focus on friendship, and they wanted a friendship advice columnist. I'd had other advice columns. I had done a baby name advice column for a different website. That was a lot of fun. Loved baby names, but I was out of babies to name. So I liked that advice voice. I also wrote an advice column for writers about how to use Twitter. This is like a million years ago, back in the early days. I liked that voice. And so they hired me to write a friendship advice column. I was a little hesitant at first, you can imagine, because I'm not a therapist. I'm not a social worker. I'm like, well, who am I? I mean, I'm obsessed with this topic and always have been. Mm-hmm. But they were like, no, we'll make that the thing, that you're just like a regular person who has an odd obsession with this topic. You're someone who will listen to someone's friendship problems endlessly, and that I enjoy analyzing these things. That was back in 2014. I worked for them for about 4 years, and I just brought it to my own site when they changed directions. And in 2021, I started the podcast because that's the direction of, do people read anymore? I mean, I don't even know. I read still, but it seemed like that's where the audience was going, and it was a natural podcast to do. And I was a very early podcast listener. So I kind of knew I wanted one. I thought I had to wait to have a friendship book to have a podcast. And then I realized, wait, says who? I did it. And I, you know, podcasting's hard. It was a huge learning curve, but I love it now. Now I'm like teaching other people how to podcast, and I'm into it.
Yes. I hear like early on, a lot of your inspiration was pulled from your own life. And I imagine that was therapeutic for you, like that allowed space to process. Tell me about it.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. I had not thought about it that way, but I think you're right, especially when I was writing that novel. And it was all about this painful friendship breakup I had had. And I think it did help me process it. And then in the early parts of the advice column, I was hearing a lot from people who had had breakups. That was seemed to be the focus for a while. I have really shifted my focus. Not that I won't talk to people about their friendship breakups or ends of friendship, but as I received information, I get a lot of anonymous letters, and they're truly anonymous. I prefer them to be anonymous. I have a form on my website. It does not require an email address. A lot of forms do. So people have to go out of their way to like make one up or sign up for some anonymous type of email that doesn't have their name. To write to me, you really don't have to do that. So you really could pour your heart out. I can't use them all because the only way for me to respond without an email address is either it used to be in the column. I still do those in my newsletter on Substack or on the podcast. And I have a Facebook group where people also write in their problems. So what I back to your question about how I process things, I do think it helped me process the breakups. But I feel like I'm trying to help people sort of think of friendship beyond that, sort of before the breakup. How to be a good friend and how to make friends. Keeping friends and making friends are two different topics. And then losing a friend is a third topic. So I see friendship, and you know, in your work, I bet you see this too, you'll have to tell me, in these three buckets, and they're not the same. The tips for making a friend are not the same as keeping a friend. It's not the same as how to end a friendship. I never talk about them all in my podcast in one episode. A lot of my episodes are in that middle bucket, keeping friends.
Well, yeah, I think there's so much more information. We're having so many more conversations around friendship breakups, the grief, the loss aspect, a lot of the nostalgia that comes up, what the friendship meant to the person. But we don't do a lot of guidance around making new friends and maintaining the friendships. We get to these endpoints where we're processing and we're trying to figure out how we could have done things better. And we can be proactive if we choose to hold on to friendships, to cultivate new friendships, to create depth in these already standing friendships.
I see and we know each other from social media, I see so many patterns on social media, and then it's hard to know if how real it is, or does the algorithm just showing me things that I'm already watching? A lot of what I see on social media that's coming at me, I think, is from somewhat younger people. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be really distraught over what I call a confusion about reciprocity. It could even be literally about social media. So I wonder if you see this. A lot of people get on there and they're very upset about their friends not liking their posts. For example, that's like a huge topic that comes in front of me. That's what people write to me about it. And I just see it. That to me is just a symbol of the issue out there of not knowing what's reasonable to expect from your friends. Your friends, I really try to tell people, are not your fans. They did not sign up to be your customer, your follower. They're your friends. They're not your follower. Mm-hmm. And they don't necessarily want to sit there and watch every one of your things and like and comment. I mean, that would be a part-time job to do that for everyone's friend. On the other side, someone might say, well, what's the big deal? So press like. Well, maybe they don't use social media that way. Maybe they use it more like TV. So they just kind of consume. They scroll. I'm like doing this with my finger, like I'm scrolling. Mm-hmm. They're not there to interact. People will say, well, I see them like other people's posts. The second you are testing your friends like that, you are watching how they behave with other friends. Each relationship is different. It's a good example, the social media, and how we demand certain things from our friends. Mm-hmm. Our friends don't know that we're demanding those things. They don't know we're upset at them. You could, I suppose, say to a friend, it would really mean a lot to me if you like to post once in a while. You could, but now what? That might seem like a little petty. Are we counting the likes? Are we keeping score? I mean, it's... Those of us who have podcasts or other people on there who are selling things on social media, it means a lot to them. But how much time are you spending on your friend's job? Did you go sit and watch them do a court case in the room? Are you, if they're a doctor or a nurse, are you sitting in the room being like, good job on that? You know, those stitches you did. It's a lot to ask, I think, to be somebody's forever fan and follower.
I have been itching to talk about this.
Oh,
honestly,
good. Let's talk about it.
Because when I started making content, podcasting, starting my business, there was no expectation that my friends would then turn into my fans. And I have seen that discourse. A like is free. A repost is free. Yes. And I love my friends, but they are not my target audience. If I am curating my content to my friends and family, A, as a business owner, I'm limiting myself. So that, like, that's not my audience. That's like an unspoken obligation that I don't need to give them. Their friendship, it wasn't based on content before. Why would I base it on the engagement of my content now? That's like an unfair expectation, I think. And it turns the reciprocity to a more of a space of give and take than true reciprocity, genuine reciprocity.
It's very, very dangerous and very common. And again, like I kind of started that out by saying, I'm not sure if it's horribly common or it's just TikTok keeps showing me people in that discourse, but I'm glad you're seeing it too. So I don't feel like I'm imagining things. And people really argue with me about it. Sometimes when I get brave and I have the energy, I don't do it a lot because I do not care to argue with people on the internet. But once in a while, I get in someone's comments and be like, I don't think that's a great way to measure your friendship. And they'll be like, exactly what you just said. Oh, it's so easy to like. A like is free. Or I'll see other posts that are like, here's how you can support your, you know, author friend, your podcaster friend, your influencer friend. And that assumes that people are out there just searching for ways that they can support their friends' businesses. I think people just want to be friends in real life. It's just not a good idea to have that be the measure. And I think thinking about your friend's job, flipping it, is a good way to think about it. How often are you even asking about your friend's job, let alone being there to clap at them?
Yeah. How long are you sitting in their classroom when they're teaching a lesson? How often are you watching them, I don't know, do therapy if your friends are therapists? Yes. Like, the expectation is so imbalanced. I see a lot on threads, especially in the entrepreneur space, where they're like, your friends aren't your friends if they're not sharing your content or handing out your business card, or the support is free. And when I read that, I'm like, yes, support is free. And that's not my customer. That's not what we signed up for the friendship to now be my fan club.
Yeah, like, your that's marketing not- team. They're not your marketing. Here's how you support a friend who's starting a business. This is what I would say. Actually, I should do a post about this. Here's how to support your friend. If they have a new book out, they have a podcast, they are just trying to start a new business, they're in a private therapy practice and they're looking for new clients. The way to support them is to be their friend, which is ask them how it's going. I always say, I don't care if my friends listen to my podcast. I do care, however, if we've been on an hour walk and at no point did they say, how's it going? How's the podcast going? I see you're out there working really hard. Do you like it still? There's ways to just talk to your friend about what they do. That is supportive. Just be a friend.
And yeah.
I'm sure you would appreciate, right, if someone said to you, how is the business going? Do you have enough clients? Do you wish you were working more? Do you wish you were working less? How's the podcast? Has it been what you wanted it to be? I just want people to talk to me about what I'm doing, just like I ask about their jobs. But I don't expect them to constantly be leaving me reviews everywhere. It would just be annoying. You don't want to be annoying to your friends.
And I think there is another layered concept that comes with this conversation, and that when people get into spaces where they're building something for themselves, their relationship to their friends who maybe aren't in the entrepreneur space or in the social media space changes. Is that something that you've seen or heard?
I think there is an awkwardness when your friend decides to be a very online person. I feel very self-conscious personally. That's something I deal with personally. I sometimes hesitate to post. I actually had somebody on my podcast recently. His name's Harlan Cohen. He does a lot of work with college kids and giving tips about college kids. He's a huge following. I mean, like 500,000 people. So he's gotten to the point where he just gets out there and says whatever he wants. And I mean, and people love it. I was talking to him and I was like, God, I wish I could do that. I feel like I have a lot to say. I feel like I'm an outgoing person. But before every single moment I post, I think about my real friends and my family. And I'm like, oh, are they going to make fun of me? Are they going to, even though I know they love me, I do wonder sometimes, are they like, what's Nina doing? Are they rolling their eyes? And I almost wish that they didn't follow me at all in a way. It's like, we need those initial followers, but I wonder if I'd be freer if they didn't. And I don't even really think I answered your question, but it was something that was on my mind when I was thinking about how the relationship changes a little bit when people are seeing your online self and you're trying to be the same person, but you're not going to be 1,000%. You got to be a little more up online. I mean, you're it's a little bit of work. And then I always do worry that I seem different or something. I don't think I am, but who knows?
Yeah, that does answer my question. I remember when I was first starting and I was like, what are my friends thinking? Like, what are they going to say? And I was much more conscientious about how often I posted.
Yes.
I'm like, I don't want to take up their feeds with my stuff.
Yes, I'm the same way. Like, enough of Nina. Oh, she's so too much. But we don't want to be like that, right? You can't advance your own stuff if you're doing it in order to like avoid people thinking negative things about you. I mean, like, now I'm giving myself therapy right here.
Yeah. Once I got more to a point where I was thinking about the people in my real life so much, it did give me the permission and the space to be more free online, to be more consistent online, to be more consistent even with podcasting. And I think what's also helped that is building real friends in the online entrepreneur space who are doing the same thing, because you can talk about it and they get it. And so that's where, for me at least, that's where I've seen the evolution. And I hear the shift in a lot of people's friendships where they still have friends who aren't in the online space. But in order to grow, to really see how this part of your life can expand, it's also creating community with folks who are doing the same thing, who are in the same season of life as you.
Yeah, that's how we met, right? And that makes a lot of sense to have basically colleagues. Mm-hmm. When you work alone like this, it's nice to develop those colleagues. And I think those are real relationships. Do you feel that way too? If they are real relationships, they're different. They're probably not going to show up to your parents' funeral, you know, not that kind of relationship. But these are the ties that I think round out our life. Not everybody needs to be best friend that you speak to every day that will show up on your doorstep with soup. It's important to have a couple of people like that. And then it is good to develop these other relationships. And for people like us or other people who have online lives, that is a more appropriate place to expect more of a reciprocity in. Mm-hmm. I do think if I met someone online and that was the basis of our relationship and we were both podcasters, whatever, and I was constantly like liking their stuff and they were never doing it back, that's a situation where I might go, okay, I'm going to probably move on mm-hmm. to the next person. Because I think I do expect, without even having said it out loud until now, probably I do expect some level of reciprocity in that. Mm-hmm. That's how you grow that connection. It's just not appropriate for our real life friends. People need to learn the difference.
Yeah, I don't even think I really deeply thought about these two until this conversation, which is so important. There is that, I guess, real life, genuine reciprocity, and then online space reciprocity. The two, I know you're online. I know you have the same goals that I do. If I'm here to help you grow, expand, if like we're having these conversations, and you know the boat that I'm in because you're also in that same boat, I hope you would return the gesture.
Yeah.
And see how we can support one another. Yeah, there is definitely a little bit more of an expectation. I had a friend who I met in the online space who wouldn't engage with my content at all. And I would consistently engage with her and reshare her stuff and all of this. I definitely felt more slighted in yeah. that sense versus if my friends that are in my real life who don't engage in social media the same way are not resharing and reposting. I'm like, because that's the foundation that we've based.
Yes, yes.
The friendship on. And so then to not have that reciprocity in that specific space, I'm like, okay.
I know that feels bad. I've had that for sure. I've had that where even if it's something, I mean, we're just like being really honest here, which is good. Sometimes it's good to like get the pettiness out, but it's not petty. There's many people you could connect mm-hmm. with online. So there's sort of no reason to be chasing someone if it's not being returned. I've had to learn that myself. Like I don't need to be treating someone like they're a celebrity and then I feel like this little peon. No, mm-hmm. we don't need to make ourselves feel that way. Unless it's an actual celebrity, but that's different.
Yeah, it's that is it a, I don't know what that in turn of why that reciprocity is important expected. And again, I think is based on the foundational aspects of what you're building the friendship on. You're not building the friendship on grabbing coffee, going for a walk, meeting their family, talking about kids. You're basing it off of a different foundation. And so it's almost a very clear and tangible, oh, I support you, but you don't support me. I think that is fair to say in that specific space.
It is an awkward thing because like you're probably not even close enough really to even say anything about it. So you just sort of, I guess you do what we would do in real life, kind of that quiet quitting. That's probably how you handle that. It's probably how I would handle it and probably how I have handled it, which is I stop liking their stuff as much. It probably doesn't show up in my feed as much then. And then I'm not purposely ignoring you. It truly is not in front of me anymore. There's so many other people and you just kind of move on. It's a bummer when you've actually developed a rapport with that person, maybe off the app, mm-hmm. like you've emailed and other things. And at the same time, sometimes people get a little too self-important and you're just like, okay, I'm moving on.
But does engaging so much in the online space also contribute to the level of disconnection that I feel is felt on a larger scale? Because we're talking about being the most connected we've ever been. We have Threads, we have TikTok, we have Instagram, we have all of these means in connection. And as so many people have spoken on, we're also in a loneliness epidemic where people are just feeling so isolated.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So there's all these memes out there that I see that make me bananas. I don't like them. I don't agree with them. And everyone's like, ha ha, they're so funny. No, they're not funny. And it will say stuff like, it's always about canceling. There's a couple different buckets, but it's all the same thing. It will be sort of like hoping someone, your friend cancels. You've seen this kind of stuff. It's mm-hmm. like you're so excited when your friend cancels. That's usually said in a more funny way. Mm-hmm. There'll be ones about like, oh, modern friendship is sending your friend, you know, 50 TikToks, you know, at 2 a.m, but never seeing each other in person. And I always be like, it doesn't have to be. No, it does not have to be that. It really shouldn't be that. That can be part of what adds levity to your friendship. Now I'm talking about people that, you know, maybe live in town with you that you are not seeing. You are instead just sending stuff back and forth. And listen, I send stuff back and forth with my friends too, but I try to push people. You have to see your friends sometimes. It is not okay to say that adult friendship and adult life is just sending each other memes. It shouldn't be. I acknowledge that is what it has become for some people, but that's a bad idea. And it will lead to disconnection and loneliness. It will atrophy your muscle of what it means to show up for somebody in person. I don't just mean in bad times. I mean, just meet for coffee, just go for a walk, not cancel. Show up, be an adult. Do what you say you are going to do. You have it on your calendar. You do it. You push other things aside. And anybody who says to me, oh, I don't have time to see my friends, because that's what's behind those memes, is this idea like, oh, we don't have time to see our friends, therefore we have to just send each other these things. Show me your screen time and I will tell you whether you actually have time to see your friends. And I do not buy it. If you could put that phone down, I know it for myself. I'm on that phone all the time. If you could put your phone down for an hour, maybe not all at once. If you shave off the 5 minutes that you're constantly checking and sending and copying the link and sending whatever, I bet you could go for a walk and at least talk to your friend on the phone. I bet you could stretch in your room while you're talking to your friend on the phone. Because I think talking on the phone these days is a huge step up from just texting or just sending memes back and forth. So that counts. That's a start. Let's make time to talk to our friends on the phone. And then you can make time to see people in person. But you have to make the time, which is one of the topics I definitely wanted to talk to you about, is scheduling. So speaking to what you were saying about being disconnected in person, it's, I do think people have time, but you have to make the time and you have to schedule it. It's not sexy. It's not fun and exciting. And it could be last minute. It could be you looked at your calendar the next day and you're like, oh, wait, I have an opening here. Let me reach out to three different people and see if somebody wants to meet for coffee, just so I can remember what it's like to actually be with people in person.
Yeah, we have maybe normalized cancel culture a little as a preservation of self-care, of rest. All of those things are important. I think we have gotten to a point where we need to show up for our friend. If we want that connection, if we say that's what we're interested in, then we have to show up. We should also want to show up. And I think that's more of an indicator on where the friendship is. If you are seeing it on your calendar and you're like, oh, I need to go hang out with, that's ambivalence. That's a completely different conversation. But when we look at our calendar and we have those scheduled friendship times, we should want to show up.
Yeah. And a lot of times, even if you don't feel like it, because that happens, right? We're just, we're so comfortable at home. We're doing our work. I'm thinking about people who work at home. And it's an effort to like get up and stop what you're doing. And then nothing's just an hour, right? Let's say you're meeting someone for lunch or a walk or coffee for an hour. It's never an hour. It's 10, 15 minutes to get there, depending where you live. More things are closer here. But, you know, if you live somewhere with a lot of traffic, okay, maybe it's a half hour to get there. The whole thing could be 2 hours. And that is interruptive. I get that. Or if you're going at night, what you're doing when you don't cancel and you push yourself and you go, even though you don't feel like it, is you are making an investment in your future self, who will feel terrible if you don't have friends. I do think that way sometimes. I am doing this walk to invest in this friendship so that this friendship is here when I need it, when I want it. I don't think any of us are going to look back on our lives and say, oh, I wish I scrolled on TikTok for an extra hour a day. And I know I sound like such a bore. I scroll as much as the next person, but I do have to force myself to put it down and engage in my real life. We are not here on this earth to just be entertained at all times. We are here to connect with other people. Everything that's happening on our phone, whether it's work or entertainment, it's part of life. But we are actually here to be in relationship with other human beings. And we have to push ourselves because it's much easier in the short run to just be entertained or continue your work. It's harder to make that investment, but it's worthwhile.
It's worth so much more than the time that I spend scrolling on TikTok or scrolling on Instagram, because I can do that A, anytime, and B, it isn't offering me true connection. It's not offering me true engagement. It's offering me a really temporary feeling of being connected, of knowing what's going on out there, but I'm not being an active participant in what's going on. I'm just an observer in what's going on. I think when we think about ways to maintain friendships is show up, even when it's inconvenient, even when you feel tired, show up.
Yes, it's that investment for the long run. Are you having to, I don't know if you can talk about this, but are you having to push clients in this direction? Is this something that comes up a lot?
I think in like the therapy space, a lot of it is that looking at the people pleasing is looking at your network and saying, who do I want to say yes to and who do I want to say no to? What happens is when we have a lot of things that we want to say no to and those little bit of yeses, everything feels like a no because we are expending so much energy on the things we want to say no to. We do not have energy for the things that we want to say yes to. And so that's where I talked about the ambivalence to being more intentional in the quality time with your friends. I think so much in the therapy space is you get to choose your friendships and you get to be intentional. And as you get older, it truly is quality over quantity because we only have 24 hours in a day. 8 of those are dedicated to work. We have kids, partners, families at home. We've got to carve out some time for them as well. We have a really limited space for friendships. And so if those friendships are not igniting you, they're not exciting, they're not inspiring you, you don't look forward to spending time with them, there needs to be some evaluation as to why you still have that person in your life and and what needs to shift in order for you to feel more excited about the friend time in your calendar.
Oh, such a good way of framing it. Probably for some people, it is an issue with the actual relationship. There's a reason they're not looking forward to seeing that person. And I wonder if for some people, they wouldn't look forward to seeing anyone. They've gotten so comfortable. I know we keep talking about this, but it's true. Just being home. Are people canceling because they don't want to see that person? Or are they canceling because they don't want to see anyone? They just want to watch a show. They just want to not have to give and take. They want to just kind of take. When I think of entertainment, entertainment's like taking. You don't have to give much. You just are entertained. In a relationship, you have to give some. You have to ask questions. It's interesting. I'm about to record an episode on my concerns on ChatGPT. And I'm so curious as a therapist what you think of this. I think people are going to get addicted to it because you don't have to engage in a two-way. People think it knows you so well. It asks you endless questions. There's no human being who's going to ask you as many questions as ChatGPT asks you, but you don't ask back, really. It's a very one-sided relationship, and I think it's going to make this even worse. It's going to make people's social muscles even weaker because they only know what it feels like to have somebody endlessly interested in you. It's not how real life is. You have to also be interested in the other person. Are people staying home because it's too much work to actually have to be in real relationship with people?
I think people forget that you build the ChatGPT to basically be an extension of yourself. And so even when people say, oh, ChatGPT is a great replacement for therapy. No, because ChatGPT isn't challenging you.
Yes.
ChatGPT is there to appease you, to help you process something. But ChatGPT is only as smart as you tell it to be.
Yes, exactly. Everyone loves someone who's just loves to hear everything you have to say and is like falling all over your every word and just dying to hear more information from you. Most people aren't like that, right? They also want support from you. You can't just take. So I don't know. I'm nervous about. So I don't mean to be so negative, but I was very in denial about AI. I didn't use it for a long time, and I thought I better understand what this thing is. I have all these teenagers, college kids in my house that are clearly using it. I don't like to not be on top of things like that, technology wise. So I experimented it just this week for the first time. Talking to it, and then my mind was blown. I get that this is, I see that we are on the edge of changing. It does come up a lot about therapy. That's the word I see thrown around a lot is that, oh, this it's my therapist, it's my friend, it's my therapist. That's got to drive you crazy.
Therapy is so valuable because it's one of the rare spaces where there is human connection.
Yeah.
And again, as we're talking, there is nothing more healing than human connection. And I know a lot of people say, well, I'm paying you, so you're paid to listen to me and stuff. But I'm not paid to care. I genuinely care. That is free. That is ongoing. That is so genuine. You can't pay that out of me. And so when people say ChatGPT is my therapist, I'm like, you're missing out on the true healing qualities of therapy. And it's not an intervention. It's not some buzzword that we offer in the space to help you heal in 2 days. It's the genuine connection, the experience of being seen, validated, offered feedback in a human-to-human space.
What you said earlier, too, is so important, that you challenge people to not just think everything they've already thought already, that you're not just neutral or affirming. And you could be both those things at certain times, I'm sure, in the process. But then you also are challenging somebody to think about something differently. Like, think about our earlier conversation about whether your friend should like your stuff all the time. ChatGPT might tell you, yes, that person's not supporting you, because that's what you are telling it. You have already decided your friend's not supporting you. You're telling it it's not supporting you. And it may affirm that, yes, a friend should, there should be give and take with a friend. Well, you could push the person a little and say, well, is that what our friend is there for in terms of our business? It's a more nuanced conversation about relationships. And I hate to see people just throw away friendships over really small things that aren't really worth. I don't call it cancel culture. I call it cutout culture, right? Because different than canceling, it's this encouraging of cutting people out for basically just being human, for the slightest infractions.
Yeah, it's ChatGPT is my best coworker, I will say, when I'm thinking of planning a launch, when I am trying to brainstorm ideas, where I save ideas. But that yes man aspect that ChatGPT has, I'll say, I have this idea. And they're like, heck yes. Would you like me to create you a calendar? Would you like they are at my whim. And that is wonderful as my co-worker, as my assistant, even. That's not great in friendship. That's not great in building a relationship. I shouldn't be expecting anyone in my friendships and my relationships to be at my disposal in the same way that ChatGPT essentially is. I'm looking for ChatGPT to churn out calendars, ideas, reword, refine, edit. But that's not a relationship.
Right. Yeah, using it like a coworker or an assistant is smart. And I'm trying to learn how to do that, because I know there are things that I do that take a long time that could be shorter. It is scary, too, though, how smart it is. And it makes me worried for artists. But at the same time, it's not going to stop. This is here and it's happening. Mm-hmm. And so I acknowledge that learning its ways is not a bad idea. It's probably good to be on top of it. Like, that's cool what you said about the calendar. I did something recently just this week with it that was really cool. Like, I'm going to be teaching a class here in town, just a one-time workshop on how to start a podcast. And I've done an episode on it. I've written some things about it. So I was like, let me take this work I've already done. I did the work. I took my transcript from my episode. I took other things I've written about podcasting. I put it in there and it like made an outline for me on my presentation. So it took my own words and my own work. That was long. I mean, it was like a 30-minute episode. I don't want to stand up there and talk for 30 minutes straight. I want it more organized, and I want slides that I can use. And it broke it down for me in a minute. And I was like, okay, wow, that is cool. I mean, that is mind blown. Why should I take 5 times longer to go through my own transcript to make slides when it can do it for me? I can see, though, how people get sucked into it. I get it now.
Nina, this conversation, I mean, we have been able to cover such a wide. I love like conversations that get to flow, but also we've been able to touch on a lot of the nuances that are happening in modern day friendship right now. What is your tip to people who are just trying to figure out how they can maintain their friendships in a climate right now that is exhausting and ever evolving and constantly unpredictable?
I have 3 main tips. We've covered really 2 of them, so I'll just refresh on those. Number 1 is to look at reciprocity differently than you might be. I didn't spell it out like this earlier. We were talking about it on social media, but it's true for a lot of things. For example, if you are the friend who always reaches out first, instead of deciding to end that friendship because the other person doesn't tend to reach out first, look for other ways that that friend has a reciprocal relationship with you. Maybe they are an excellent listener. Maybe they ask really good questions when you're talking. Maybe they always respond pretty quickly when you reach out. They're there. They schedule something. If you suggest a date to them to get together and it's always you doing it first, but they always respond immediately and say, oh, no, I can't do that date, but how about this date? Mm-hmm. I try to help people to see that as reciprocity, that reciprocity in a friendship doesn't mean I do this thing and then you do that exact thing the exact same way. And I think people would be more satisfied with their friendships if they were able to see that and not be so literal with the thing I do for you and then you do that thing for me. So that's number one. Number two really is scheduling. Like we said, like you have to schedule, even if it's a phone call. If you let so much time go by, it gets that much harder to get together with the person because now it feels like every time's like new. That can be its own exhausting. It's actually easier to spend time with people that you've been spending time with. It's more natural. It's not so forced. And then the third thing that we really haven't gone over that much is I think that we all need to train ourselves on being more forgiving. And then if you could be more forgiving in general, you would be able to maintain friendships longer because we all need forgiveness. There's times we dropped the ball. We didn't email back. We didn't text back. There's a little tiny new, again, that's back to the theme of modern friendship. My car now, I don't know if yours does this, can read text to you. The Apple Play, whatever it's called, CarPlay. Sometimes I'll press the button for it to read me a text. But what happens when you do that is when you get home, that text is not highlighted anymore on your phone. Now it's been read. So I have a few times, and I'm really on it with my communication. I don't like to like let things hang for days. If the thing's not highlighted, I mean, it could fall in my stuff. And I have missed a few things since that CarPlay updated. Could my friend be insulted? Or wouldn't it be nice if they would just maybe know that something's up. So instead of being like, oh, Nina's doesn't care about me, it's like, oh, no, let me remind her. Oh, hey, can you let me know I asked you about? And that gives me the opportunity to say, oh, shoot, that fell in my text. Thank you for reaching back out. It's those little acts of forgiveness that help keep a friendship. It makes it so that you're not telling yourself a story all the time. It's just like a little more communication and more forgiveness. Assuming the best, I guess, is what I'm saying. Just, and if you're not sure, ask. So forgiveness, assuming the best, and if you're not sure, ask. These are all the little behaviors that allow you to keep your friends.
Absolutely. And I mean, emphasizing the forgiveness aspect, it's showing each other grace, being able to be understanding, but being able to understand because you know that person and you trust that person's intentions. Thank you so much for this engaging, thought-provoking conversation. Everyone, if you are interested in connecting with Nina, all of her details will be linked in the show notes down below. Thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. And I cannot wait to have you on my show, by the way, because we're going to be talking on mine too. So looking forward. Listeners, you can find my Facebook group, Dear Nina the Group. When you go into the search part of Facebook, just type in Dear Nina the Group. And that is a great place where you can get your anonymous friendship questions answered, not just by me, but by other active members of the group who have been there. And maybe they can even answer from the other point of view because it's so many people coming together who care about friendship. So that's at Dear Nina the Group. And if we're not connected on social media, that's at Dear Nina Friendship on Instagram and TikTok, even on YouTube. All right. Have a great week.